I know there are different degrees of pain and suffering that people go through. But whatever level or degree it is, we all seem to carry one. Or perhaps we're still affected by the scars of pain from the past. Or maybe we have dealt with that. Jesus and his disciples together were walking through Jericho, and there was a large crowd. And on the side of the street is a man called Bartimaeus, blind man. Now, blindness is something that leaves you with physical disadvantage and a disability. And it is a kind of suffering that is hard to understand if you are not blind yourself. So not just having to deal with the problem of not having to see, not being able to see physically, but Timaeus also was dealing with the problem of stigma around blind people around the time. Bartimaeus, as a blind man, as you can see in the passage, as he was shouting out to Jesus, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." What was the reply of the disciples? They rebuked him and told him to be quiet. Now, this was probably not so uncommon during that time. Because of the stigma, there was another story in John when Jesus was again met with a blind man. The teachers and the Pharisees asked Jesus, "Lord, tell us, is this blind man blind because of his sins or his father's sins?" So there is a stigma around blindness and physical disability and suffering connected to sin or connected to bad people doing bad things. And as a consequence, you suffer. So you can imagine Bartimaeus not only not being able to see, but he was also having to fight the problem of people and their prejudices and the stigmas they label this Bartimaeus with. It could not have been easy. And he was left to beg. That's the third problem. He was having to find his own means of supporting himself. Any one of those problems by themselves would cause a lot of grief and pain and stress. But he's got all these three going at the same time. To not be able to see is hard enough. But to be rebuked for wanting to be healed, can you imagine that? To be told off for wanting to feel better, to get better. And that too in public. It was a very public affair. He could have been very ashamed with that very public rejection of his appeal. But as the story goes, he shouted all the more. He wanted to be healed. He wanted to get out of that rut. And what did Jesus do? Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." why things happen the way they do. We all know good people who are suffering horrible diseases. And on the other side, we all know bad people getting away with things they shouldn't. So it's very difficult for people to put these two together. A God who loves and suffering at the same time, why can't he do anything? And that is a very real question. It's also the question that puts people off. It becomes a hindrance to getting to know God. It can also be something that pulls people away from church. But suffering is also a time when people prioritize on what's important in life, the meaning of life, what's beyond we can see, what we can see and hear and smell and taste. It has a way of focusing our hearts and our minds on one thing only, the questions of why. Jesus answered, asked, "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. And the blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Hallelujah. Here we have a story of someone who was healed from his blindness. And there are also many stories of how Jesus healed people who were sick and even raising dead people back to life. And in the Christian tradition, 2,000 years of history, we also have stories of people getting healed. And we have the incredible testimony of Gary being cancer-free. But we also, at the same time, know that there are unanswered prayers, aren't they? That we're still praying for. This is not to say that we should stop praying at all. Not because we don't understand or we just can't help it. Job's case, he surrendered to the fact that he didn't know everything, and God's ways are higher than his ways. God sees way more than his eyes could see. In the case of Bartimaeus, do you know what? Jesus was on his way to suffer and die for us. Jesus, this was the last healing story in the book of Mark. And Jesus was on his way to the cross. He was about to enter Jerusalem where he would be tortured, questioned, beaten, and hung on the cross. He, as you can imagine, as he approached his last days, his mind would be focused on that. But he took time for this man who was calling out to him. So hear this. We may not know why good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people. Jesus is listening to your heart's cry.
Jesus is with you in the suffering. Jesus is on his way to, as he was on his way to the cross to suffer for us. He took the time to do that. So we may not know why many of the answers were, but the answer that we can hang on to is the finished work of Jesus in his death and his resurrection, that we can have hope. In the resurrection life of Jesus and the promise that he made for those who believe in him. You know, Jesus, he said in John chapter 16, he said to his disciples, "You will have many troubles in this world." So Jesus didn't promise that life will be all good and smooth sailing once you become his followers. He said, "You will have many troubles," to his disciples. "But fear not, for I have overcome the world." And that is something that we need to hold on to in our unanswered prayers. As we sit with the pain, as we sit with someone else or our own pain and suffering. I'm going to read a story of how the hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul." Do you know that one? Some of us do, yeah. And it is written by David Warner. I mean, it is a true story, but this particular narration is written by David Warner. In mid-November 1873, an ocean liner, the Ville du Havre, set sail from New York, bound for France, with 313 passengers on board. One can imagine the festive Atlantic crossing with ribbons of red, swags of evergreen, and Christmas carols wafting through a dining room, sparkling with candlelight. In a few days, they would make landfall in Europe, just in time for Christmas in Paris. Anna Spafford and her four little girls were among the delighted passengers. They had come from Chicago. Annie, aged 11. Margaret Lee, 9. Bessie, 5. And little Tanetta, aged 2. Their father, Horatio, had intended to sail with them, but was detained on business. "Not to worry," he assured his wife and children. "He would book his passage in a few days, and soon they would be reunited in Paris, the city of lights, celebrating the season of goodwill." And goodwill is what they needed. 2 years earlier, the Great Chicago Fire had all but destroyed Horatio's business interest. So this journey was intended to restore hope and bring healing into their lives. Once on board the ship, on the evening of November the 22nd, Anna and her girls knelt down, said their prayers, and fell asleep, dreaming of the Yuletide festivities to come. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, they were suddenly jolted awake in their berths. Despite a clear starry sky, the Ville du Havre had inexplicably collided with a Loch Earn, an iron-hulled Scottish clipper. Lifeboats quickly filled with people. Many passengers leapt into the icy waters, and Anna tried desperately to keep her children together. But the two eldest became separated in the confusion. Just 12 minutes after the impact, a wave washed over the deck and Anna was drawn under, together with her two youngest daughter. She held on to 5-year-old Bessie until her strength gave out. Her memory was her memory of 2-year-old Tanetta in her late nightgown, torn from her grasp getting smaller and smaller until she too finally disappeared. Later, the crew of the Loch Earn found Anna unconscious, floating on a wooden plank. When the ship docked in Wales, Anna sent a telegram to her husband. It read, "Saved alone, what should I do?" Horatio immediately sailed from New York and he wrote to a friend, "There is just one thing in these days that had become magnificently clear. I must not lose faith." 4 days into his voyage, on a Thursday evening, the captain summoned Mr. Sufford to the foredeck. By the crew's calculations, they were nearing the very place where Anna's ship had gone down, taking with it their four daughters, now resting some 3 miles below. But Horatio refused to look down and did not think of our dear ones. He later recounted. Instead, he gazed out across the rolling waves and up into the moonlit sky. There and then, he began to formulate a simple expression of his faith, a verse that would become a hymn. "When peace like a river attended my way, when sorrows like sea billows rolled, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul." There is more to the story, but let's stop there. In a minute, I'm going to play the song. And I want you to listen, join in, whatever you feel like. And if you feel that somebody next to you needs a hug or hand-holding, please do so as we minister to one another as well. And if you are listening online, it is the song. If you want to, you can go and search "It Is Well" by Audrey Assad.